Davin recently, the disciple of Radhanath Swami Maharaj, asked the question, well, what's your relationship with Srila Prabhupada and Vrindavan? So it was interesting, the answer that came out. And I was thinking maybe I could share that answer, because when we left Vrindavan, you know, you were just, how many of you were on the last yatra with Maharaj? Thank you. So many. So when you leave Vrindavan, you all know what you felt that you were leaving behind. And there was one time, I'll jump to 73 already, although I'll start later, but it was one time when we were, Srila Prabhupada came in and out of Vrindavan many, many times. In 1973, because the project was initiated in March of 1972. Cornerstone was laid down there. And as disciples, Western disciples, who had no knowledge of the language, had no knowledge really of anything to do with business, we had no knowledge of many social customs that were to be observed in the Holy Dawn. But we were given the task of trying to build the Krishna Balaram temple project in the Holy Dawn. And I think every mistake that could be made, we made it. Just like Maharaj said this morning, you'll have so many obstacles in your spiritual life. That's what we're here for, is to accept the obstacles that Krishna puts in front of us so we learn how to get out of this material world. So in Vrindavan and the Holy Dham, and also in Mayapur Dham, those were our first two big Dham projects in India. We made so many mistakes. And so therefore, Srila Prabhupada had to come in and out of the Dham to help us. And sometimes, if you look at the folio, you'll see how many times he did come, sometimes for even one day, sometimes for 2 days, but just to help us to allow the project to move forward in a timely fashion. So one time he came, very short time, and when we left Vrindavan, it was only Tejas, Gurudas, Yamuna, and Shamsundar, and we brought Prabhupada to the Delhi airport at that time. And the Delhi airport was almost empty. It was not like it is now. This was 1973. And there were, I remember we were sitting in a little group, and somehow the plane was delayed, and we had to sit and sit. And we heard this click, 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 a long time before we could see who the body belonged to, the click, click. So the click-clacks turned out to be a girl, maybe 20 years old, with high heel shoes on. You know, those ones that are really tall? And then she had on the black stockings and the mini kind of mini dress on. And everybody was trying to not keep their eyes on the click-clack, but she just was really big presence. So Shamsundar said, he looked over at Prabhupada and he said, "We're not in Vrindavan anymore, Srila Prabhupada." And Prabhupada looked at him and said, "Yes, we are in Vrindavan. This is not Vrindavan." And it made it to the light bulb turning on that, yes, you leave Vrindavan, but Vrindavan is also where? In the heart. Vrindavan is received through all of our senses. It's drunk in a very special way, using all of our senses. So when we leave the Dham of Vrindavan, we have to bring that wherever we go. So fortunately, when we left Vrindavan just a few days ago, we came to Vrindavan South, which is Chaupati Temple. Chaupati Temple is as much Vrindavan as the Holy Dham is for me. This temple, the atmosphere in this temple, their lordships in this temple, the presence of Maharaj, the worship of Srila Prabhupada, and the care that the devotees have for each other, this makes this place a very special part of Vrindavan. So when I was reflecting after leaving that Vrindavan and coming here, I was thinking, how can I adjust the answer of how Prabhupada revealed Vrindavan? And I came to three ways that Prabhupada revealed Vrindavan to this lowly, unfortunate, incarcerated soul who had the great bhagya or good fortune to meet Srila Prabhupada when I did. And that was by three ways. The first way was by his personal company. That means the mercy of the Guru. That was the first way that I realized Vrindavan. Second way was the holy name. Through the holy name was part number two of that. And part number three of appreciating and realizing Vrindavan is Vaishnavas. The mercy of the Vaishnavas. So in way back in 1966, when I first went to my younger sister's wedding in September of 1966, I was only in New York for a few days, and I had very little exchange with Prabhupada, although it was very important, because the first time you come in contact with Vaishnavas, it isn't a lukewarm position usually. It's what Maharaj spoke about, it's an intense experience. Either you can't relate to the devotees, or you really connect with the devotees, but it's very rarely in the middle. So that just, I thought this was the most hopeful thing I'd ever heard in my life. When we talk about hope, from fear to hope, this idea that one day on foot, Prabhupada or Swamiji would show us, reveal to us, what is Vrindavan. So from that second, from that walk, I was just waiting for, when is that going to come? So then from that, the next revelation of Vrindavan was a jump to 1969. Then, you know, we went to London in 68, August, to try to start some British yatra. It wasn't until the fall of 1969 that Srila Prabhupada actually arrived. So we were there about 1 year before he came. And when he came, it just so happened that we had met the Beatles, and one of the Beatles, this John Lennon, had a big estate called Tittenhurst Park. And so he invited Prabhupada and his disciples to come stay there with him. So again, every morning Srila Prabhupada took his walk. And after his walk, he came back and sat down in his little room, the greeting room, took off his socks, and sat down with a harmonium, or a drum, or a pair of kartals, and sang prayers. Now, I can't remember of any time in all the history of Prabhupada's presence with us, other than this segment of time at John Lennon's, where he did this, and he did it, inaugurated it, and did it alone. So at that time was some rather remarkable arrangement. His servant secretary was Purushottam Das, and his cooks were the three of us, Janki, Malati, and Yamuna, cook servants. So one morning, Prabhupada was chanting a prayer, and I was on the stairs, really quiet, right by his room, right outside his room. And at the end of chanting the prayer, he called my name. How he knew I was there, I don't know. It was actually, to me, I felt very remarkable. But, so I went in and said, "So, what are you doing?" I said, "I'm listening. Srila Prabhupada is so beautiful." Chanting. And he said, "So do you want to come in here and listen?" I said, "Yes, very much." So at that time, the old thump-thump drumming of the probably heard tapes of those days where we knew one drum or two drum beats from Prabhupada. So he said, you can play drum and I will play harmonica. So, and Vrishatam can play kartals. So then for several mornings we got to record Srila Prabhupada. So I wanted to just read to you this prayer that the first time I heard Prabhupada sing. Now this is before songbooks. This is before tape ministries. This is before almost everything we have now in our Krishna consciousness movement. This is really the early days of Krishna consciousness. So if we heard Srila Prabhupada sing a prayer, we had no idea what he was singing. None. Unless he explained it to us, we knew Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Hare Krishna, Govinda Jaya Jaya, and of course the one day home prayers, not much time. But it was really whatever you heard him sing was. So this is what Prabhupada was singing. This is a prayer by Narottam Das Thakur, Vidyapati. Hari Hari Bifale. Hari Hari Bifale Janama Goinu Manusa Janama Koiya Radha Krishna Navo Jaya Vajiya Janiya Sunya Bhisha Kaya. The translation is, O Lord Hari, I have wasted my life. Although I have taken a rare human birth, like a miser, I have not served Radha and Krishna. And thus I have unknowingly drunk poison. Now when Srila Prabhupada sang this bhajan, he repeated this line 8, 9, 10 times. So deeply he went into this, the mood of this prayer, I have not served Radha and Krishna. Then he, for the next verse, Goloke ra premadana Harinama sankirtana Ratinana janmilo keinatai Samsara vishanade divanishiya jale Judhaite nakai nohai. Then he would sing this 8 or 10 times. Deeper, deeper, deeper he'd go into this prayer. This is translated out. The treasure of divine love in Goloka Vrindavan has descended as the congregational chanting of Lord Hari's holy names. Hare Krishna!
Hare Krishna! Krishna!
Aha, Prabhu Nanda. Krishna Pano, Sutta Jutta, Karunam Kuri Vole Vara, Narakama Dashakari, Natwati Lurango Pari, Kamine Keyachaya Mara. O Lord Krishna, son of Nanda, accompanied by the daughter of Rishabhanu, please be merciful to me now. Narottamadas says, O Lord, please do not push me away from your reddish lotus feet, for who is there but my beloved except for you? So when I heard this prayer that Srila Prabhupada was singing, I said, so Swami, called him Swamiji, I said, what does this prayer mean? And he explained it to me. And he said, so Yamuna Devi, what is your favorite prayer? And I only knew one. And that was from the first red brick volume of Srimad Bhagavatam, where the Shikshastika prayers are in the front. You know that? In the very front, it was with the original translation. And that's the only prayer I ever saw in print. So I said, well, I like the Shikshastika prayers. So it was very nice. So I said, so Swamiji, what is your favorite prayer? And he said, this prayer, Hari Hari Vipule. So when I heard it was talking about Vrindavan and the son of Nanda, Vrishabhanu, this was another layer of Prabhupada revealing Vrindavan without being in Vrindavan. So all these examples I'm giving of the first layer of knowing Vrindavan, it was all through one thing, Shravana. Whatever I knew of Vrindavan was from these prayers and from hearing Prabhupada talk about Vrindavan and Srimad Bhagavatam. The actual, and the holy name, of course, the holy name comes in layers, doesn't it? For all of us. We hear the holy name, we're attracted to the holy name, we chant the holy name every day, we depend on the holy name. But there's sometimes a disparity between the chanting and the realization of our relish for the holy name. We may be completely dependent on the holy name, but we may not be conscious of the depths of the effect of this chanting the holy names. That comes in layers, and layer and layer and layer and layer until we're pure devotees. So at this time, I was only a devotee for 3 years. Before Prabhupada actually brought us to India on a plane, set us down in India, and that was the beginning of his revelation of what Vrindavan was. And that came through that, when we landed in India, it was October 4th, 1970, and until March of 72, we traveled throughout India with Prabhupada on essentially one huge Nagar Sankirtan party. And what we did was chant constantly. We chanted with such feeling. It was a very intimate, small party, only about 20 devotees, and a third of them were women. This is a huge revelation of Prabhupada's mercy, is the fact that he allowed women the close proximity that he did to his person. This was revolutionary in our Vaishnava history. Prabhupada was a sannyasi and performed marriages. Prabhupada was a sannyasi and he allowed women on his personal sankirtan party. He allowed us to practice and serve through this chanting of the holy name. And we did that as a family, very close family. And the effect of that was deeply profound. It affected Shakt India. It shocked India. There wasn't a place we went where the front page of the newspaper wasn't some article on the white dancing white elephants of devotees who were going through the streets chanting the holy names. So until March of 72, everything was really the holy name and Srila Prabhupada's person. And then, from then, I was left with my husband in Vrindavan to help just spread the Vrindavan temple treasure. And I think then the element of the mercy of Vaishnavas became very important, because as was brought up this morning in a wonderful question to Maharaj, what happens after you've been a devotee for some time and some challenges come in the form of difficulty of working together, especially on a managerial level? How do we avoid offenses to each other? And it was in Vrindavan when we had this tremendous service requested of us of Srila Prabhupada to try to build a place for, especially Prabhupada wanted Vrindavan and Mayapur to be places for pilgrims to come from around the world, namely, at first his disciples. He said to taste the beauty of the Dharma, to hear the Dham. He wanted that for both Mayapur and Vrindavan. So it was to be an international guest center. In the center of it, a temple with vibrant Krishna conscious activities going on, and a place for prasadam distribution. He said, especially in Vrindavan, you won't be recognized so much for your scholarship. But if you distribute prasadam very nicely, and if you worship the deity very nicely, you will be respected in the end. So that was one of the principal reasons he wanted centers done. And there's many long stories of how Prabhupada very, very mercifully revealed Vrindavan to us. Sometimes with encouragement, sometimes with huge chastisement. The chastisement, how many of you have felt the kind chastisement of your Guru Maharaj? Please raise your hands. Not so many. Well, perhaps you'll get that mercy one day in your life. Because Prabhupada gave us lots of that. When we were trying to do the Vrindavan project. It's a special relationship that one has with a spiritual master, chastisement. And it's sometimes difficult when you're being chastised to appreciate the potency of chastisement. But in retrospect, that also becomes a great relishing factor of mercy that we continue to learn from years and years and years later. Isn't it? Because when you get chastised, you feel a little whipped, like slapping. You feel your energy change when you're chastised. And it takes sometimes a long time to put that in perspective, the beauty of that chastisement. But that kind of mercy we got a great deal on the Vrindavan project. So in wrapping up thinking of Prabhupada and mercy on Vrindavan, you can read a book like Mahanidhi Swami on appreciating Vrindavan and hear from many, many Shastras. Or you can attend every one of Radhanath Maharaj's incredible yatras, and you can feel, taste, hear, smell, touch, and breathe Vrindavan through the hearing process. When we heard this last experience that you, who went on the last yatra? Please raise your hands. Okay. So when we heard this story at Govardhan Hill, where you all got the chance to cook over wood stoves on clay pots, offerings for eating Garaj Maharaj, and make mental offerings for the pleasure of the Lord. I'm just thinking, I can't think of a more relishable festival than you have so many festivals in Chaupati Base that are beyond fathoming the nectar of. But when I heard about that one, it just went over the top of all the ones that I'd ever heard of. That the description of it was just so beautiful. So you're being revealed by the kindness of the holy name, your spiritual master, and other Vaishnavas, the mercy of the Vrindavan Dham experience. And here in Chaupati, I'm so deeply grateful to each and every one of you. Excuse me, that I've had a chance to know and hear from, learn from, especially that's at Radhanath Maharaj's feet. Because when he introduces someone, he introduces them in such a way that he presents, at least in my case, very clearly, he presents something that I'm not at all. And I have so far to go to be even an aspiring Vaishnava. But I'm deeply, deeply, deeply grateful to all of you for inspiring me in Krishna consciousness, and especially my Maharaj. And all boys to all of your mercy. Hare Krishna.
Would you like to hear a story of Srila Prabhupada chastising Yamuna Devi? This is an especially wonderful story because it illustrates how Srila Prabhupada was so dedicated to seeing that what we established in India was established properly, and that we took great care in how we served the Vaishnavas and how we served the deity. And this took place in Delhi, and why it was so profound to me is that I had just gotten to India, and I found out when I got into Bombay that my visa was only good for 3 weeks, and I had to leave India to get it renewed, and so I had to go to Nepal. And I can't even remember whether it was on the way there or on the way back. I came to the developed Delhi temple that devotees had just moved into, Nandi Ketan, and Srila Prabhupada was there. And I had never met Yamuna before that time, although one of my god sisters, Palika Devi, used Yamuna's quarters in Vrindavan to make a spaghetti dinner for us. I'll never forget that. In India, she has spaghetti. Quite an amazing thing.
An Italian. Yeah.
Italian family. So, Srila Prabhupada was sitting on his Vyasa-san with this very stern, grave look on his face. And Yamuna Devi had just come, and she came and sat in the room, and a kirtan was going on. She was actually being kirtan. Kirtan was going on, and Srila Prabhupada stopped the kirtan, right in the middle of the kirtan. And he looked over at Yamuna Devi, and he said, "How could you have let this happen?" Very, very strong. And Yamuna was not even from the Delhi temple. She was part of the Vrindavan project. She was just a visitor into the temple. "How could you let this happen?" He didn't say that of the temple president, Tejas. He didn't say that of anyone else. And so, of course, Yamuna didn't know what he was referring to. And then he looked at the deities and he said, "You have left Krishna sitting on the fence post." And she tried to interject, "To Prabhupada, I'm just visiting. I don't have anything to do with the deity program." But he chastised her, illustrating for us that what the Guru has given, what Srila Prabhupada has given, it's our duty to do what we can to try to preserve. So Srila Prabhupada said to Yamuna, "I have trained you in deity worship." So he felt somehow that that should extend, I guess, to the Delhi area. But at that time, he said something very amazing that has stayed with me all of this time. He said, "You may think that this is a stone statue standing before you. Stone idol." And he says, "And you may think, let me give this rubbish garland." I'll never forget how he said, "Let me give this rubbish garland to this stone statue. And Krishna will not mind. But he will remain a stone statue to you forever. So please take care," he said. So he used Yamuna Devi, even though she had no responsibility there. to illustrate for us how important it was to take care in our service to Krishna, in our service to the devotees.
We're supposed to help each other. That's what Sangha means. That we help each other to go back to Godhead under the merciful instruction of the spiritual master. And that's such a glorious thing to explore, because there's never an end to it. As long as we're breathing, there's no end to the potential of that one single thing. Helping each other to become Krishna conscious. That's in all rasas, isn't it? It isn't just this rasa or that rasa. It's in every instance, every minute of our existence. This is a place to take advantage of going back to Godhead by just following the instructions of the spiritual master and helping each other in a loving way. There was one other nice example of chastisement I could tell you about. It has to do with cleaning. So Srila Prabhupada is, when I see the pictures of the brahmacharis cleaning, it makes me so happy. Because I know what you're cleaning your heart, or cleaning the temple. So in the very beginning of the Vrindavan project, as you know, Srila Prabhupada, the room that he passed in where his bed is, that room was where Srila Prabhupada sat behind his desk. So if we had a darshan, it was there. And then actually he slept in another room. But now that room is not being used for that. At any rate, when we first made the temple matters, I said we made every mistake you can. Well, one mistake, one really good one, was that the floor in Srila Prabhupada's room, what color is it? So the people, and it's not a stone, it's not a granite floor, it's one of those amalgamate floors where you put color in it. I don't know what they're called. What is that floor? Where you, it's like a mixture and you put tints in it, little marble chips. So they put in some kind of the wrong mixture of black in with the aggregate. So that when the floor dried, if you just rubbed your finger across it like this, your finger got black. So we were really nervous, how are we going to fix this? So we started a day and night cleaning crew, cleaning Prabhupada's floor. We'd wash it, dry it, black. Wash it, dry it, black. For days, we had this project of trying to get the floor so that it wouldn't show black. Nothing was working. I was in charge of cleaning his rooms. So then with our brilliant intelligence, we decided to copy people who have white floors. So we put down the duddies and then put down the white sheets. So any tiny part of the floor that wasn't covered with the rugs and the white sheets, your feet had black. So you could have completely white sheets and two people come in the room. And if they step on black, they have black footprints all over the white sheets. So Prabhupada, you know, he commented and said, who's done this? So whose shoulders did that fall on? And I was the only woman in the party. This is an interesting thing. All were men, and all had very important roles in the construction project. My role was the deity department and Prabhupada's rooms. So I had to make some ridiculous comment like, what would you like, Srila Prabhupada? I'm not sure what to do. I said, oh, no intelligence. There's no intelligence. It's very true, Srila Prabhupada. Do you have any suggestions? Oh, I could better take care of the room? No, you can figure this out. You figure this out. So for days I was trying to think, what are we going to do? Finally we took up the sheets. And then Ron said, where are the sheets? So probably I took them off. And that's your solution? So, really, I don't know how many months it took for those floors to be clean, but I got the... To show you how strict Prohibin was with cleaning, we had a whole system that we would clean the everything above the floor the last. You do the floor first and then move up, clean everything up, and then come back down and clean the floor. So the whole room was cleaned twice. That's everything, every surface in his room, every morning. So one day, Prabhupada came back from his walk. He sat down at his desk. He looked at his desk. He reached across his desk, and on the edge of the desk was a staple gun. You know those 1.5-inch long staple guns? They're called mini staple guns. And this mini staple gun was in a plastic envelope, like a little sleeve, to protect it. Prabhupada reached across, took the staple gun, pulled it out of his case, opened the staple gun, so it was laying flat, took his little pinky finger and went in the space between the knob and the staple, rubbed his finger, and he said, dust. Who has cleaned my room? Haven't I trained you how to clean the room? No, Srila Prabhupada, I'm so dull that I never ever thought to look there for dust. That's useless. So Prabhupada was a little strict with me on cleaning, and strict in many ways, but you know, I treasure today. I treasure that dust between Prabhupada's staple and his other side. Because when the spiritual master is strict with you, it helps you to be conscious of what conditioning means. Otherwise, conditioning is just a word. I'm conditioned from time immemorial. It's hard to wrap your mind around. It's just a huge thing, this conditioning. Unless we're trained by the spiritual master to get out of a conditioned state is very slow, can be slow. So when the spiritual master chastises you by giving you instructions on simple things like this, it's very helpful. Anyway, we certainly won't take any more of your valuable time. Thank you so much for is there any just like tiny questions somebody might want to ask? Yes, Prabhuji, in the very back.
Govinda Madhi Krishna.
If you chant with me. We don't need instruments, but we can pray. Actually, I love so much that you in this temple chant not verse 29 and verse 30. If you chant so much. And now we're going to go back and institute this before our Bhagavatam class in the morning.
It's amazing because Jamuna does not lead kirtan in groups of people anymore. It hasn't for some time, but when we just visited Jayapataka Swami in the hospital, he was sitting taking lunch. We were taking lunch with him, and that was one of the things he kept requesting, please lead. So Jamuna would have to lead a kirtan. And then he said afterward, now another one. And so because he was asking, she couldn't refuse. But it was a revolutionary thing.
Jai Pataka Maharaj Ki Jai! Jai Pataka Maharaj Ki Jai! Thank you. Program, Every morning, Kaushalya and I would get up at 1 in the morning, walk to Tribeni, get in a boat, go out, take a bath, come back, have all four rounds chanted by 4 a.m. And I'd come and sit right at the bottom of Prabhupada Vyasa. So Chidananda, later in the day, he came up to me and he said, Jamuna, have you noticed that where all the other women are sitting? I said, yes, I did. He said, well, you should be sitting there too, out there. So it was like way in the back, like some of you are way in the back. But the nice thing is, so are some of the men. Everybody has a back and a front in any crowd. So anyway, the next morning, instead of sitting up Prabhupada's lotus feet, as I usually did, I was sitting way in the back. And well, it was about 10:30 in the morning, and I was hanging up my one sari or two saris. I was hanging it up on the Shamiana fence. And Prabhupada recognized the bottom of my other sari, and he called my name. He saw it through his little opening in his tent. So he said, come. And I came in. I paid my obeisances. And before I even got up, he looked at me with very plaintive eyes, and he said, so you don't like to hear anymore? And I burst into tears, as I do. I told you I do this. I've always done this. And I said, I'd love to hear from you more than ever, Srila Prabhupada. So to set the climate for this, I have to say that every single person in our party, this was what we lived for, was to hear Prabhupada. To be with Prabhupada was one thing, but to hear every morning his Bhagavatam class, it was, you know, have you been to Jaipur and you've seen them run to Radha Govinda's Mangalarti in the morning? There's real enthusiasm for that. We would run to hear this morning program with Prabhupada. And he was speaking the sixth canto, first time he gave lectures on the sixth canto in Ajamu. So I said to Srila Prabhupada, more than anything in the world, that's all I want to hear. And he said, so why you weren't sitting? And I said, well, Chaitananda Swami told me that it was etiquette that I don't sit there, that I sit in the back, far in the back with the ladies. So he was a little quiet. He said, yes, that is it. And then I said, Srila Prabhupada, how many times did you actually sit with your Guru Maharaj? Were you with your Guru Maharaj? And he said, immediately, without a second response, I have never been away from him, not for one second, since I met him. And I said, it was a little forceful, I said, but how many times were you with him physically? And he said, very few. Maybe 5 or 6 times. But they were very intimate and very meaningful to me. And then he made a statement that was also repeated. I've seen other devotees say that Srila Prabhupada said this in their presence, but he personally said to me, he said, many, many of my god brothers, they were big, big sannyasis. And they thought that associating with the spiritual master personally was the most important thing. He said, but in some cases they are no better than mosquitoes on the lap of the king. And what is the business of mosquito? It is simply to suck
blood.
Since I don't think that that's the only way to associate with the spiritual master. He said, you try to hear. So for me, to answer your question, hearing and remembering Prabhupada are the two most important in all my spiritual life. Any other questions? I think we approached the Chitananda and said, none of the men are sitting. In other words, we were a stage. It was a stage. And we had Radha Madhava, who are now in Mayapur, who are our worshipful deities. And then Srila Prabhupada was sitting on a makeshift Shankasana. And generally speaking, all of the devotees, they stay on the stage with Prabhupada. And our guests had, you know, the ropes, so the men were on one side and the ladies were on the other side. But I think just for shock value, this particular Maharaj just wanted to vanish to the back because I was sitting so close to Prabhupada in front. So then we approached him and said, do you want just all the ladies to sit out with the audience, or are all the men going to go too? Because sometimes Prabhupada would ask me for some bizarre reason to leave kirtans. And our whole kirtan party, we always sat together. It's awkward for half of a kirtan party to be in one place and then half of a kirtan party to be in the other place. It's a little awkward. I mean, maybe it could be done. So we went to him and said, well, would it be all right if the ladies sat over on the far end of the stage, kind of thing? So that's what we ended up doing while we were in Jaipur, and that obviously was all right for Srila Prabhupada. But he knew it was, for me, it was a tremendous learning moment that I realized then that there would be a time in the future. Up until then, I never thought I couldn't even conceive of being separated from Prabhupada or that he would die. I couldn't conceive of it, because in 66, when he had his heart attack, we know from Jalajita Diary, and then in 67, Memorial Day, when he had a stroke, that was another defining moment. I was going to say, in terms of kirtan, I'll never forget that kirtan where Prabhupada, we got word from New York that if you want Swamiji to live, chant. And all these little brand new devotees, we were all those devotees for days, if weeks. And we had a 24-hour kirtan, praying for Prabhupada's life in front of Lord Jagannath, Subhadra, and Balaram. And that was a defining moment. How many of you have chanted for 24 hours straight? Raise your hand. So it's a very intense experience where you don't leave the room. You just chant. Puniyanja is almost like. And then there's a little couple hours of rest, and the rest is kirtan and puja. And that's very inspiring. But I think that was a huge defining moment in my relationship with the Holy Name, was praying for Prabhupada's life in that one 24-hour period. But there are many, many, many. Each one of us, each one in this room has so many defining moments with their Guru Maharaj that, you know, they just come back and you learn from them every time you remember them. Prabhupada once made this simple, obvious comment that in order to remember, you must hear and chant. So that you cannot, you won't, your memory or remembering will become less effective to the degree that you hear less and chant less. So those three things of the nine processes of bhakti, they're also core to my relationship with Prabhupada, those three things. And in recent years, they've increased to your energy.
Thank you.
Thank you. Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Sorry to be embarrassed.
Yeah!
arti and the putting the deities to bed at night, the lullaby, and the tulsi puja, the sweetest of sweet.